There have been two mass shootings in recent weeks, one at a Planned Parenthood in Colorado and the other at a social services facility in San Bernardino, California.
Mike Wagner is with us to talk about how the media has been covering these recent shootings. He's an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. Mike, welcome back. Always good to talk to you.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Before we get into some of the how they cover it and maybe the slant in the coverage, I want to talk about the amount of coverage. We've got these breaking news stories. Almost round-the-clock coverage on the cable. It's all over the internet, and it's often two facts repeated again and again in speculation. What do you make of what you've seen in these last couple incidents?
Well, journalists are sure getting a lot of practice at covering these things. They're happening so often, it seems, lately. And when these events break, very little is known. And this, as you say, the same facts are kind of repeated over and over, or the same what they think to be are the facts are repeated over and over. We saw in the San Bernardino situation at first, there were reports of three shooters, all men. Of course, that turned out not to be true. And at the same time, you have some reporters who are sort of veterans of this kind of coverage saying, usually the early reports are erroneous, so we're not going to go with too much about what we're hearing or seeing on Twitter. We'll say that oftentimes these end up being a lone shooter, and then there began to be speculation that the shooter in San Bernardino was a lone gunman and that this was a workplace violence situation. But of course, we then found out that in fact, that it seems the FBI believes that the shooter and his wife were, or both shooters, were radicalized for quite some time and behaved very differently than the initial reporting seemed. And so usually what we know at first is something terrible is happening. We're not sure when it's going to stop, and we're not quite sure how many people have died or are injured or who exactly did this, and we certainly usually don't know why in the early going.
There's a lot of conflicting motives in the reporting,
right.
I think. One, obviously, I think most, hopefully all journalists want to get things right, but there's also, you want to get things first.
Yes.
And also you want to, the public in these cases is watching. They want to hear stuff, so you want to give them stuff to hear. How do they perform that balancing act?
Well, they can almost feel the audience at home knowing that in a live situation, they're armed with their second screen. They can watch on their phone or their iPad or device. They can click to see what all the different channels are doing. They can surf the radio to see who has what, when, what's the latest information. This channel says two shooters. This channel says three. And so reporters are really stuck, and also they're stuck because a lot of the information they're getting from sources that they trust in a police department or from the FBI or from a local community's, kind of city governance structure are telling journalists what they know, but what they think they know. But in fact, it may just be that it's really early and that one eyewitness and another eyewitness's testimony, you guessed it, disagree with each other, and it's hard to know where the information streams are coming from, and that makes it really hard to tell the truth in these breaking situations. And so journalists would do a better job to say we don't know much. It sure looks like something awful is happening, but we don't know more than what we can officially confirm, or that official sources, usually law enforcement, want us to tell you in this situation. Everything else is usually speculation and often ends up being wrong.
One argument I've seen play out since these shootings, and in shootings in the past, I should say, is that the media treats the shooters differently based on their race and faith background. The argument's made that when there's a white shooter in the Charleston case, in the Colorado Planned Parenthood, the claim has been that there's more attention to, this is a troubled person, misfit, never fit in, less attention to the background maybe, or less, a different tone if there's an African-American shooter, and it's still another one if it's, in the San Bernardino case, Muslims. So, huge issue. What do you make of what you've seen lately?
There is some evidence that criticism stands on firm ground. There's evidence that when a shooter is African-American, often words like angry appear in stories about them and are way more likely to appear. When the shooter is white, rarely is their religious faith mentioned as compared to when a shooter is Muslim. And so if a shooter is Muslim, their religion is mentioned in almost every story that references them. And so it's very complicated to think about how these stories are covered, but the way that these stories are framed certainly affect how people interpret the danger to themselves, how they interpret what's happened in the community where it's happened, and also affects how people out on in the political world make comments, as we've seen this week with Donald Trump and others.
Here's a clip from The Daily Show mocking MSNBC's coverage of the San Bernardino shooters. The clip starts with MSNBC's coverage.
Unfortunately, there appears to be a little bit of a pushing and shoving, which I'm not sure we need to do. But as we step inside, we'll take a look and see what we have.
Oh, really? The pushing and shoving is what you're not sure you need to do? Really? You know, I know I'm still learning the news networks here, but is it supposed to be like the movie Nightcrawler? Is that what's happening? You know that movie where Jake Gyllenhaal runs into crime scenes with a camera to get pictures of dead bodies? Because I think MSNBC took that movie as an instructional video.
So this is when they were in the shooter's apartment looking around, and there was a lot of controversy about this.
Right. NBC and MSNBC's Kerry Sanders on live television started rummaging through their stuff. Law enforcement had said, we're done with this area now, and had taken everything that they felt was of interest to them. But there was showing of people's photographs, social security cards, like calendars in the home, but especially photographs of children, and not their children, but just people now being linked to this situation on live television with no vetting of the information. It was kind of this very peculiar and uncomfortable search through a home on live television, and they, I think, quite rightly received quite a lot of criticism for doing that.
What's at stake, briefly, Mike, as we wrap up this issue, when the media gets it wrong early?
The first things that people hear shape our interpretation of what happened, and if what we learned was wrong, it affects how we think about the whole situation even after we learn the facts.
We're picking up our discussion now with Mike Wagner of UW-Madison about how the media is covering Donald Trump and his presidential campaign since he made these comments on Monday.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on.
Mike, a lot of observers seeing a change in how the media talks about Donald Trump, especially since those remarks on Monday. What do you make of that?
Well, I think some of that was led in part by the mainstream media on television, especially NBC ran a long opinion piece from Tom Brokaw, the former anchor of the NBC Nightly News, where he ran a story calling Trump's ideas dangerous and un-American, and ran a whole and featured Joe McCarthy and other kinds of demagogues in the history of the story, and then also featured a Muslim American soldier who joined after 9/11 and was killed in Iraq to push back against the Trump claim. And since then, especially, lots of media have been pushing back hard against Trump's ideas about what you heard in the clip.
I've been reading some media analysis today before the show, and some people are kind of pointing toward three stages of Trump coverage. One, haha, Donald Trump.
Right.
Two, we're getting really good ratings from talking about Donald Trump. Let's keep doing it. And now, and this is this week in particular, we're not sure we should be covering Donald Trump so much. Some people saying we should ignore Donald Trump's. Others saying, BuzzFeed, I think, saying we can call Trump in our coverage a mendacious racist, I think was the phrase they used. So what do you make of the three stages of Trump coverage?
Well, it's a lot like stages of other kinds of scandals and other things that are usually kind of infotainment kinds of things. And you could think about coverage of different scandals in the media. You know, years ago when a congressman's intern, Chandra Levy, went missing and was found dead, that was, you know, 24/7 on the cable news. And then it was, wow, we're getting great ratings. And then it was, should we really be doing this? And it's the same kind of thing we're hearing from the news media about Trump. The Huffington Post first put him on the entertainment page. They just recently took him off and said, no, this is serious enough to cover in politics. But now people are starting to wonder, gee, the correlation between our attention in the news media and Trump's ratings in the polls is really high. We're not paying as much attention to the other candidates. Is that fair? What's Trump doing with this attention? Those questions are now starting to get asked by news providers.
Let's give a listen to Donald Trump on Morning Joe Tuesday when he kept talking and talking, even as the hosts were trying to ask questions.
Donald, you got to let us ask questions. Good. You can't just talk. No, you got to let us actually ask questions. You're just talking.
Donald, you're not going to keep talking.
We will go to break if you keep talking. We're going to ask you questions.
Go to break, everybody.
Right now. We'll be right back with more Morning Joe.
Talk that there's more pushback from people while they're interviewing Donald Trump. Vivid example there.
Yeah, and what's remarkable is that when they came back from break, Trump stayed on the phone, and they actually did do a little bit of a Q&A for a few minutes after that. But it is the case where the news media are starting to push back on Trump. They're doing so on social media. They're doing so when they're able to interview him. But Trump is very adept at dealing with the news media. And even in that case, on Morning Joe, he's doing it on the phone. He has a little bit more control there. He can just hang up. He has a little more control over the situation than he would if he was in their studio having to face them in the same kind of way to face those questions. And so until the news media push back a little harder and treat Trump the same way they treat everybody else, you don't see Jeb Bush calling into these shows in the way that you get, see Trump allowed to, things are probably going to continue to be covered in Trump's favor.
I've read some analysis suggesting early on the political reporters thought, oh, Donald Trump, he doesn't get politics. He's not going to know how to do this stuff. People are starting to say Donald Trump understands TV better than any of these candidates out there. He knows how to say things to get TV coverage, and he understands that. For him, anyway, there's no such thing as bad publicity, it seems like.
He wrote about it in The Art of the Deal. He said, basically, you need to tell, you know, small hyperbolic lies to the news media to get lots of attention. And if you do, you'll get lots of attention. And that's okay, in his view. And that's the kind of thing he's been doing on the campaign trail. He hasn't been doing things other candidates for office do, like setting up lots of field offices for get-out-the-vote operations and cultivating relationships with elected officials in states. He's not doing those things. He's certainly not doing the things that politicians who win presidential nominations do, but he's a master right now at affecting television news coverage of his candidacy.
If you were consulted by a cable network, say, or a major daily newspaper, what advice would you give them on how to handle this? What he says is relevant. He's a front runner in polls. He's a major candidate at this point anyway.
Absolutely.
But how much is too much?
I would say we will establish a set of ground rules with Mr. Trump and all of the candidates we interview, and the rules are these. We're going to ask you a question about policy. If you don't answer it, we'll interrupt you and ask it again. If you don't answer it, that's all of the interview, and we're not going to talk to you anymore. This is our air. This is our channel. If you don't want to answer the questions, you don't have to be here.
If Trump supporters see that, do they care? Are they,
no,
or will they
really
just see this as, oh, see, the mainstream media, the mainstream politicians ganging up on the guy who's talking our language?
Yeah. Dave Weigel, a reporter, I believe, for the Washington Post, sat in on a focus group of Trump supporters and came away with the conclusion that when the mainstream media attack, it reinforces support that many people who like Donald Trump have for Donald Trump. And that's consistent with what political scientists and psychologists know about how people react when they're given information that they don't want to believe about things that they like. And in this case, if you like Donald Trump and you hear things that he said about women or Mexicans or Muslims or Rosie O'Donnell, and you decide, yes, I don't like those things, or I don't like those groups either, and I'm more and more for Trump as he gets criticized for talking about those things.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Mike, I can't think of any examples like this in my lifetime.
Yeah, this is new, I think. You know, he has no political experience. His business experience, he inherited his wealth and has performed worse than just having invested it in mutual funds would have done. And yet he's incredibly well-known and fairly popular amongst a sizable segment of people who are relevant to who gets nominated for president. It's a very peculiar thing we're seeing.
Mike, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Mike Wagner, associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. He joined us to talk about media coverage of mass shooters, first of all, and then Donald Trump's recent comments and his presidential campaign.